This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Bring the jury in. An issue has arisen which I need to take up with the attorneys. And I'm gonna summarize it briefly. It's relating to the jury, and then we can talk a little bit about it. So my understanding of how the issue has developed is this: this morning, one of the jurors approached the bailiff. The bailiff is in question is supposed to be in the room right now. I don't see her, but she'll be here shortly. Well, I need her to be brought in here. I indicated I needed her in here right away. So the juror approached the bailiff and indicated that he got a text from his buddy out of state who said, "I saw you on television. You're looking pretty dapper," or something to that effect, which raised concerns on the part of the juror that the jury was getting videoed, which, of course, violates my order. So then the bailiff approached my judicial assistant, who's here, and I've indicated to the bailiffs in the future they need to bring these issues to me, not to my judicial assistant. My judicial assistant, hearing this issue, went to the videographers from Law and Crime, who were in the back, and indicated this is being reported. They apparently indicated that we'd need to know when it was in order to look to see if it happened. My judicial assistant then went back, spoke to the juror to try to nail that down. Again, I've indicated to my judicial assistant that I want all those things to go through the bailiffs to me, but this is how it occurred. And I don't think on the part of anybody involved that there was any malice involved in how this unfolded. The juror then apparently was able to give some detail as to when this occurred. I think it was around later in the afternoon yesterday, but I don't know that for sure. Some of the details I don't have, and that'll be part of what we'll talk about here in a minute. Then my understanding is that the video has been completely scanned, and there has been no occasion when the jury has been shown across the live stream or any other place. And that's the state of affairs. This has been developing this morning. And so it would appear, assuming that to be the case, in other words, that the jury never was shown, information is flowing into the jury. And I don't know if information is flowing out from the jury, but clearly I gave the jury instructions as to dealing with information that's coming in. That's the current state of affairs. And so the real question, I think I'm gonna turn it over to each side and see if they have a thought about what to do. I have some thoughts about what to do, but I'm gonna turn it over to the state first. Is there anything you'd like to address me on with regard to taking this issue up?
Judges, thank you. Judge, a couple of concerns I think come to mind. First, I'd be interested in knowing, I understand that there's the live stream, but I understand there may also be other sources of media that are here or potentially other individuals who may have done some filming or photography within the courtroom, which I think would violate the court's order, but I don't know that that's not happened. I think it would be helpful to voir dire that particular juror to understand better what Like, who informed him of this information? Is that person potentially have other people who could be, do other people know that he has jury duty and they might be in the courtroom and then texting him? So, for example, there are a number of just citizen members in the gallery. Maybe someone in the gallery also knows this juror and then sent a message to a friend of theirs or something like that. So voir diring, I think the individual juror to know what was shared, how it was shared, by whom it was shared, might give us a better idea of how the information is coming in and going out from the jury.
Sure. Before I turn to Mr. Fralick, there's a few, your comments have raised a few other pieces of information. First of all, my understanding is in the conversation that occurred between my judicial assistant and the juror, there were other jurors nearby and they heard that that might be happening. And so I think there may need to be some kind of a statement made to the jury as a whole. To some of your other points, we also considered the fact that it could have been a member of the public who was using their cell phone. I've asked security to look at the security cameras to see if they can track down if that's the case. I don't have any feedback from that search yet. But what I can tell you is my understanding is that the juror indicated the feed came across YouTube. Anything can come across YouTube, but the feed is, my order is very specific. There are three cameras in this courtroom and there's to be no other cameras. So unless YouTube picked up on a video that was illicitly obtained and then posted it, I doubt that that's the source of the concern. The concern, of course, then is potentially false information's coming in to the jury. In any event, the state is suggesting that I voir dire or we voir dire that juror. But I'm going to turn to you, Mr. Fralick.
Thank you, Your Honor. All of this raises a question, I believe, of whether my client, Taylor Chavez, can get a fair and impartial jury with the jurors that we have. It's concerning. I know that my client has some concerns about this. I'd ask the court to consider a motion for mistrial.
Well, what I can tell you is I anticipated this kind of an argument. In other words, I know I denied a motion for change of venue or to bring in an outside jury. I'm absolutely convinced that there's nothing about this event that couldn't occur in any other jury situation, including had I brought in a jury from the opposite side of the state and sequestered them the entire time. So that is, everyone has cell phones that they have. Everyone gets text messages. And I expect the jurors are going to follow my instruction, which is, if someone tries to talk to you about this case, despite your telling them not to, you should report that to me. So the implication in there is, you're not prohibited from receiving a text message from a friend about this trial. What you are prohibited from doing is discussing the case, and that your first step is tell them to stop doing that. And if they continue to do that, they're to report that to me. So I'm not going to grant your motion for mistrial because quite honestly, the issue is the same. We need a fair and impartial jury. All these jurors during voir dire have indicated we can do that. This is a I'm not even sure if there's been an infraction, because quite frankly, if this juror tells us, I got that text message and I said, don't talk to me anymore about this case, and then he reported it to the bailiff, that'd be precisely what I would want him to do. The problem is it spun a little bit, and it was investigated, so we actually have more information than we did before, but I'm going to deny the motion for mistrial because I frankly don't see the basis for it at this point. But I think I'm going to avail myself of the opportunity to bring the juror in. Either of you want to, either side want to hear from either the bailiff or my judicial assistant about the steps they took or the things they heard. Mr. Saunders?
I think what I'd be interested in knowing is to the extent that the judicial assistant or the bailiff is aware that other jurors partook in this process or were aware of this process, that's the information I'd be concerned about from either the bailiff or the judicial assistant.
Let me just indicate, again, I've spoken to both of them. My judicial assistant here is here. I'm going to recite what, because she's not near a microphone, but I'm going to ask her to indicate whether I'm reciting accurately. My understanding is when the juror shared this with her, there were jurors sitting there nearby who said, "Are we on TV?" And they were assured that they're not. Yeah. Is that accurate, Ms. Pigeon?
Not to worry, it would not be on any
video. Okay. She indicates, because she's not near a microphone, she told them not to worry, they would not be on any video, which I think, frankly, was an accurate recitation, because from my understanding is they haven't been on, that my order has been followed precisely by the media, which is what I'd expect them to do. Anything else, Mr. Lizay, from either the bailiff or my JA?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Fralick?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Okay. I'm going to excuse my JA. She can go back and take up her tasks. But I am going to ask if you could invite that juror in to please bring him in. Before we do that, I would expect we would just bring the juror right in here. Is there a request that we do it some other place? I don't know why this would be an inappropriate venue, as long as they're not videoed. Mr. Saunders?
No, that's fine.
Mr. Fralick?
Your Honor, at least for me, I find this kind of to be a little unusual, and I'm concerned that if the juror has to answer some questions in front of a large crowd, it may be more uncomfortable, whereas if we're in a more private space with the lawyers in the court, the judge might be a little easier.
Well, I've indicated to the jurors, and they've taken an oath follow the law, to uphold their oath as a juror. I don't think I've noticed anybody on that jury who seems disinterested or unconcerned or upset in any way about what they're doing. They all seem very intent and very interested in serving in their role. So I'm satisfied that if I brought him in here, they'd answer this individual would answer the questions appropriately. And then I'm going to bring the juror in here. After the juror is done, then we'll need to talk briefly about whether or not, and I'm inclined to indicate to all the jurors the circumstance, but we can also determine, once we've questioned this juror, the extent of the issue involved. So we're going to bring the juror in now, right here. All rise for the juror. So the reason you're in here is because we are responding to a concern that you had raised earlier this morning with the bailiff, I think, regarding potentially having been videoed while you're serving on the jury. And I'm really interested in knowing what you heard, because we're trying to get to the bottom of the issue.
Sure. And it was a conversation I wasn't concerned, but yesterday afternoon, a coworker of mine who works in Indiana, we work remotely, texted me that he had seen me at this trial, and I thought that was unusual. And I had seen the text when I went back into the room and our phones are. And so I didn't think very much of it, and so then this morning when it was brought up, I had asked him where he had seen it, and he had said YouTube.
Okay.
And said that it was streaming.
And when did he indicate, maybe he said that, what time?
He texted me yesterday at 3 o'clock sharp.
Okay. Okay. Questions from the state?
Just curious whether he texted you a screenshot or a link, or was it just a text?
Mr. Fralick, any questions?
Did you save the text?
It's on my phone.
So it's on your phone?
Yes.
Did you respond back?
I did.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. All right, anything else that you feel you want to tell me about that event or issue?
No, other than you're free to look at my phone. I'm happy to show it to you. I'm happy to inquire further with him. I can consider him a friend as well as a coworker. Whatever would please the court.
Okay, I am going to just indicate to you that perhaps, you know, going forward, if you receive any messages from coworkers or friends, that you advise them you can't speak about this case at all until it's concluded.
Sure.
Okay?
Certainly. And my response was, thank you. That's what I said. I can show it.
Okay. Very good. Okay. I think I'm going to excuse you then. Thank you. All rise. Be seated. Mr. Lizay.
Your Honor, I guess I don't have any concerns about how this impacts the integrity of the jury in any way. It seems like a very limited conversation. I think it is probably a good idea for the court to reiterate to the jury that you have given instructions that they aren't being filmed, just to potentially alleviate any concerns that they might have, and that, you know, you're confident that those orders are going to be followed.
Mr. Fralick?
Your Honor, I inquire, you know, how is it possible that a juror in a case like this, or any case, is seen on TV? And that's concerning to me. I believe that you know, this juror, even by responding back, which he shouldn't have done, you know, causes an issue for the defense, at least for the integrity of the jury. My client and I are concerned about, you know, is this jury, can it be fair and impartial? So I, again, based on what's been discussed here, make a motion for mistrial.
Okay. Well, I'm going to deny your motion for mistrial. A couple of things. First of all, I agree that the juror shouldn't have replied. First of all, the juror also indicated that he's not really concerned about it. And I think, you know, one of the main reasons that we enter orders that jurors are not to be videoed is so that there's, first, juror security. So this individual apparently wasn't concerned with that information. Secondly, I'm not even certain that it happened. It's hard to drill into why he would get a video from, or a message from a friend in Indiana about being on this case. If he wasn't, I can't explain it, but I'm satisfied that that the cameras over which I have control in this courtroom, that being the media cameras, aren't filming the jury. It's possible, I suppose, that someone in the audience used their phone to make that video. I don't have the results of the efforts by security to try to track that down. Hopefully I will get something. But I'm not satisfied that this juror has indicated in any way that this is going to make it more difficult for him to serve on this jury. He indicated he wasn't concerned. So I'm going to deny the motion for mistrial. I intend to just indicate, I intend, frankly, to do two things. I'm going to, again, read the jurors the instruction that I've been giving them regarding communication. I think it's important to reiterate that for them. I'm also going to advise them that I've made a specific order that they're not to be videoed, and that from my investigation as a result of this issue, that they haven't been videoed. As part of that, I think I'm going to need to relate to them that a concern has been raised, only because beyond that, they'll wonder, why are you telling us all this? But that's what I intend to relate to them. Mr. Lizay, any objection to that?
No.
Mr. Freilich?
No, Your Honor, but I have a concern.
Okay.
So would the court consider striking that particular juror? Because we have alternates. The other thing I'm worried about is there going to be discussion about, well, why did the court want to talk to you, to this male juror? I have some concerns about that as well. So would the court, you know, consider maybe striking this juror? We've got several alternates.
Sure. Well, first of all, regarding a conversation the jury might have about why did the court want to talk to you, that's why I indicated I would tell them that a concern has been raised. And they'll get it, oh, it was the guy you brought out here. So, and I don't think the jury will in any way look on him disfavorably because he was simply reporting to the court something that occurred, which is what I want people to do. So that's that. But let me turn to the state. Mr. Freilich has asked that I strike that juror.
And I don't think there's a basis to do that at this time based on the nature of the voir dire with that juror.
I don't either. I frankly think this juror has perhaps skirted a little close to my rule. Instead of responding thank you or asking when it occurred, he should have said something along the lines of thank you, but please don't talk to me on this until this trial is over. On the other hand, friends might feel that's a bit terse to reply, but I'm going to reinforce that. I think the point is that the reply that he made was so innocuous that I'm not satisfied he violated my order to the point where he would have to be excused. Again, I think the notion that nobody on this jury is going to get any text messages from anybody while this trial is pending is something I simply can't control. So I can't find that in any way would cause me to strike him. And again, he's indicated he wasn't concerned with being shown as a juror, so he hasn't formulated any sort of bias or prejudice as a result of that event. He's just simply reporting what happened, which is what I expect a juror to do. So I'm going to deny the motion. Your motion is noted, Mr. Freilich. I'm going to deny the motion to strike him, and that's what I intend to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Lizay?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Freilich?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, we'll bring the jury. Seated. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. And I need to take up an issue with you before we get started. A concern has been raised by one of your number that perhaps at some point in time, perhaps yesterday, that the jury may have been videotaped and put out on a live stream. And a couple of things I want to advise you about that situation. First of all, I appreciate the fact that that it was reported right to the bailiff, and that's what I need you to do. As a result of the report, the matter has been looked into by scouring the videos that have been taken of this trial, and at no point in the videos that I have authorized to be taken have you been videoed. Just to give you a little more detail about that, in this trial I've allowed three cameras to be utilized. Those cameras are situated in such a location that you're not being videoed by them. When I need to, I look at the media room and I can stop the video feed at any particular time for a particular witness. Perhaps you've seen me do that and heard me do that. I've entered an order that no one in the audience is allowed to use a cell phone to take photos or videos. At this time, security is scouring the videos of this entire trial to see if anybody in the audience has been doing that. I can tell you that I can see everything from up here and I haven't noticed it. And in case you wonder, this courtroom is also being monitored in various different locations. So we're being watched while we're being watched, okay? The people that are videoing it are being watched by the people that are sitting in the security office downstairs. So I want to assure you that order was entered by me. I'm endeavoring to great lengths to make sure it's abided by. And as far as I know, right up until this very minute, my orders have been followed to a T. That doesn't mean I'll stop looking into it. And I would encourage any of you, if you have a concern about that, as we go forward, report it to the bailiff. There's one other thing I want to do, because it's important. I'm going to again give you this instruction. You've heard it before, and you'll hear it again. Do not communicate with anyone about this trial or your experience as a juror while you are serving on this jury. Do not use computer, cell phone, or other electronic device with communication capabilities to share any information about this case. For example, do not communicate by blog, email, text message, Twitter, or in any other way on or off the computer. Do not permit anyone to communicate with you about this case. And if anyone does so, despite your telling them not to, you should report that to me. I appreciate that it is tempting when you go home in the evening to discuss this case with another member of your household, but you may not do so. This case must be decided by you, the jurors, based upon the evidence presented in the courtroom. People not serving on this jury have not heard the evidence, and it is improper for them to influence your deliberations and decisions in this case. After this trial is completed, you are free to communicate with anyone in any manner. That's all I'm going to have to say about that for right now. I believe the case is still with the state. Actually, we're at cross-examination, however. Detective, I think you were on the witness stand. I'll have you come back. And I will just remind you, Detective, you're still under oath.
Yes.
I'm also going to remind everyone to please use their microphone. As you can see, we've switched court reporters. We are now using the DAR system, which is an excellent electronic system, but I want to make sure everybody's using their microphones. Having said that, Mr. Frelick, you've gotten a few complaints, so try to tend to your microphone, but I'm probably the worst offender. So go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Detective Groff, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
February 23rd of 2022, were you called down to the police department?
Yes.
What time did you get there?
I probably arrived about 4:45 in the morning, I think.
Okay. Is that kind of a normal shift for you, sir?
No.
What's a normal shift?
7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
And why were you contacted to get down there at 4:45 a.m.?
As part of my duties as a detective, we can get called after hours for major crimes, and in this case, I was called by a supervisor to ask if I would assist in a homicide investigation.
Okay. And were you told that there was a minivan that was found parked at the Eastman Avenue apartment complex?
Initially, my initial phone call, no.
Okay. At some point then you were told that there was a minivan that was of interest, correct?
Yes.
And that was parked over at the Eastman Avenue apartments?
Yes.
You interviewed several people, correct?
Yes.
One being Tara Pakinich, correct?
Correct.
And did you also talk to Stephen Hendricks?
No.
Okay. Did you talk to Taylor Shabizis as well?
Yes.
You talked to Ms. Pakinich and Ms. Shabizis on the same day, fair?
Yes.
Did you talk to Ms. Pakinich first?
Yes.
Okay. And was it such that they were down at the police department when you arrived?
No.
Okay. You got there first?
I don't recall if I got there first or if Ms. Pakinich was there first, but Ms. Shabizis was not there when I first arrived.
Okay. So you took Tara Pakinich into a room, correct?
Yes.
And what did you talk about? The fact that she found something in a bucket in the basement of her house?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And then you followed up with further questions with regards to that?
Yes, I did some preliminary questions, yes.
Okay. And did she indicate to you that Taylor Shabizis and her son were friends?
Yes.
That they went to school together?
Yes.
They went to high school together at Bayport?
Yes.
Okay. And did she indicate to you that how she came upon the bucket in the basement?
Judge, I'm not concerned any of this is particularly prejudicial, but it is all hearsay. Ms. Pakinich testified, and he can and did ask these questions to Ms. Pakinich. The statement that the detective took from a witness who is not a party is hearsay information.
Well, it's really not offered for the truth of the matter, Your Honor. It's just to get some background information. But I can move on.
When you move on. So okay. The question's withdrawn.
Okay. So after you finished talking to Tara Pakinich, then was Taylor Shabizis brought in?
Yes.
Okay. And initially you introduced yourself, correct?
Yes.
And Detective Kempf was there. Is that fair?
That's correct.
Were you sort of the lead detective on this?
Well, initially I was one of many detectives who came in to do the initial investigation. But throughout the course of the investigation, it took a more of a lead role.
Okay. So in the interview room, you swabbed your hands, correct?
Yes.
Did you take any pictures?
I did not.
You offered her some water, correct?
At some point, yes.
Okay. And then you told her that a few hours ago, officers went to a residence on Stony Brook Lane and a bucket was found with a human head in it, correct?
Correct.
And what was her response, do you remember?
Something to the effect of, oh, really, or something to that.
Did she say that it's pretty effed up?
Yes, that would be correct.
Pretty fucked up, correct? That's what she said?
Yes.
And did she indicate to you that Shad was her ex-boyfriend?
Eventually, yes.
Okay. And then did you confirm that she lived on Eastman Avenue?
Yes.
Apartment 1 at 2353 Eastman Avenue, correct?
Correct.
And she indicated that she lived there with a Scott Tomes?
Correct.
And then you had further questions, correct?
Of course.
You asked her questions about things that may be in the basement. Is that fair?
Yes.
And did she give you comments like, well, that's a good question?
That sounds familiar, yes.
Did she say that she blacked out at some point?
Yes.
And did she tell you that she needed time to think?
Yes.
And you said, that's not a problem, take your time, correct?
That's correct.
When you were talking to her, was she smiling inappropriately?
I did not observe that, no.
Did you hear her laugh sometimes during the interview?
I believe so.
Her mood, did it kind of go up and down during your interview with her on March 23rd?
No.
Now, there were two detectives in the interview room with her, correct?
Correct.
And was there any sort of intimidation towards her at all?
Nothing.
During the time that you talked with her, did she say things that were sort of bizarre?
Well, some of the acts that she described that she did, you know, were something that, you know, was not common. But bizarre, I wouldn't say bizarre.
Unusual. How about that?
Sure.
Okay. And you told her that this was kind of an ongoing investigation, and the detectives and the officers and the law enforcement personnel on the scene were trying to figure out what was going on. Is that fair?
Yes.
Because law enforcement really didn't know what was going on, correct?
Absolutely not.
Would you say it was a situation that was unfolding and developing?
Yes.
She did indicate to you that did she exhibit responses that were kind of short and snippy?
No.
Did she say that she did not know what was going on?
Well, she did make a comment that at one point she had blacked out, and again, I assured her that she could take her time and. She had plenty of time to remember what she did.
Now, you've been on the force you've been an officer for 27 years, correct? You've got a lot of experience. Is that fair?
37 years.
37 yes. years. Oh, sorry.
I'm sorry. 30 years, then yes.
30 years, okay. So, and you've been a detective for 17, yes?
Yes.
You've worked with people that have used meth, correct?
I have.
Meth is a very powerful drug, isn't it?
It can be, yes.
It can cause people to act and react in an unusual way. Is that fair?
Yes.
When you were talking to her, she had some problems answering questions, correct?
No.
She would mumble and trail off when you would ask her a question. Is that fair?
No.
She said a few times, damn, my head. Didn't she say that during the interview?
I don't know if she's referring to her head or Mr. Therian's head.
Okay. You didn't know what she was talking about, correct, on that topic?
I don't recall.
Okay. Did she tell you that she was coming off a high or a buzz?
No.
She did say that she was paranoid, correct?
She did mention the word paranoid in terms of why she had left the residence.
And she said it was really weird. She made that comment, correct?
I don't recall.
And she said, I think it was the dope. Didn't she say that to you?
She did make those comments, yes.
As far as the investigation was concerned, there were no human remains found at the Eastman Avenue apartment. Is that fair?
Correct. Not inside the apartment.
Correct. There was a minivan. Well, strike that. At the apartment, Scott Tomes lived there, correct?
Yes.
And he also owned a gold-colored Town and Country minivan, correct?
Correct.
When you were talking to Miss Your Business, she did say something about she heard gunshots, correct?
Correct.
Did you hear any gunshots?
When?
When you were either at Stony Brook or at Eastman Avenue?
I was never at Eastman, but when I was at Stony Brook very briefly, it was much later in the day, and I did not hear any gunshots.
You reviewed a lot of different reports and talked to a lot of different detectives, including Detective Scanlon, Detective Kemp, Lieutenant Buckman, a lot of the other officers involved, correct?
Yes.
Did any of the officers provide any details or reports about any gunshots being fired at either Stony Brook or Eastman Avenue on or about February 23rd of 2022?
I don't recall who said, but I do recall that during the time of the time that officers were called to the Stony Brook residence, that there was another call that officers were on that might have involved gunshots.
At some other location, though, correct?
I'm sorry?
At some other location, not Stony Brook or Eastman Avenue, correct?
Correct.
Okay. During the interview that you had with Taylor's Your Business, did it go on for about 6 hours?
That's an estimate on my part. I'm not sure.
That's fair. That's fair. So you started in the morning, and then at some point you took a break because she had to go over to St. Vincent's Hospital?
Yes.
And then you came back and then resumed the interview, correct?
Yes.
All at the Green Bay Police Department?
Yes.
Okay. You had a chance to look at her hands, her thumbs, and her fingers, correct?
Yes.
She had some scratches and some deep cuts on her thumbs and fingers. Is that fair?
She had a cut on her thumb and some scratches, yes. Okay.
And she got medical treatment for that?
Yes.
Okay. Were there, when you asked Ms. Chibiza some questions, sometimes she was non-responsive. Is that fair?
No.
She did not answer your question every time you asked one. Is that fair?
I would not say that is correct.
She said some odd or weird things, though, correct? During the interview? Specifically, well, the arm or something like that would rebuild into muscle.
Yes, she made several comments of, you know, when she was strangling Mr. Therian, that, you know, his muscle would rebuild, and made several comments about, you know, that she forgot to leave the head behind in the bucket in the basement. You know, those types of comments in terms of describing her actions and what she was doing, but in terms of those being bizarre, I did not find that to be in any way, shape, or form.
You found it to be odd, though, especially when she laughed about it, correct?
Well, I did not feel that way.
Okay. But she did laugh about it when you talked about it, correct?
I think maybe at one point there was kind of a smirk or something, but it was in the context of just how she replied back to me.
And she did tell you that on some date before February 23rd of 2022 that her and Mr. Therian were smoking ice, correct?
Smoking, yes, ice or methamphetamine.
Yeah, she used the word bitch, correct?
Initially.
And then it changed from ice to methamphetamine, yes?
Yes.
And then she indicated that a meth pipe and a plastic bindle would be in the basement?
She said that.
She told you that it was a weird night. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Did she say it was a weird night?
That's possible.
Okay. And then she did talk about drugs, and she talked about the fact that she's been off drugs, and then she's on drugs. She said words to that effect. Is that right?
We did talk about her drug use in the days previous to the interview. I believe she did make comments of using drugs in the past.
Okay.
This term of her, how much, I don't recall that.
Okay. And fair to say that during the interview, oftentimes Ms. Chibizis would say, I don't know. She didn't know the answer to your question.
I'm sure that she probably had some of those answers.
She would say, I have no idea, correct?
I guess I would have to know specifically what I was asking her.
And is it fair to say that some of the things that she said just didn't make sense?
No.
You sort of had a narrative and she kind of went along with it, correct?
I would not say that, no. I did repeat several of things that she would say to clarify, but I I would not say that I led her in any way.
When you were talking to her, oftentimes she'd have her hand over her mouth, correct?
It's possible.
And she would talk very softly, correct?
I was able to hear her.
But she did talk softly, correct?
I don't know.
She said something about that she was tweaking out or that she was tweaking. Do you know what she meant by that?
I do not recall those specific words. I would know what she would mean by tweaking out, though, yes. And I don't recall as to what time period she was talking about either.
Okay. Is it fair to say that the first part of your interview was about 3 hours and then you went to the hospital?
That's fair.
You came back and then the second part, was that about 3 hours or how long was it?
I'm not sure.
Not sure. A couple hours though?
Sure.
Okay. Took a while to ask questions and try to figure out what was going on. Fair?
Right. As I was interviewing her, their investigators were at the house, and so it was an ongoing and continuing investigation to determine what happened.
Right. During the interview that you had with her, she said, "I didn't mean for all this to happen. I'm sorry." Is that fair?
I think that she did make a comment as to initially that she did not mean to kill Mr. Shibisnes. I'm sorry, Mr. Therian.
You've had cases involving asphyxiation, correct?
Yes.
And can you tell me what we mean by that? Is it choking?
Asphyxiation?
Yes.
Choking is another word. Is when someone's windpipe or has been blocked and breathing has been obstructed.
Okay. Is it a situation where people that maybe are into this kind of thing choke each other to get some euphoria or pleasure out of it?
I have heard of that practice.
Okay. With regards to this case, law enforcement did find two dog collars or two chains. Is that fair?
Yes.
During the interview, Ms. Shibiza said something about, "I can't think right now." Remember that?
No.
She said, "I'm fucking nuts." Remember that?
No.
Were you surprised by some of the things that she said to you?
Overall, in the context of what we were discussing and the information that had been provided to me?
Yes. No. And did she tell you that the body can rebuild itself?
She made that comment, yes.
There was a second interview on February 28th of 2022 back at the Green Bay Police Department, correct?
Yes.
And Detective Scanlon was there for that?
He was.
Did he kind of ask most of the questions for that interview?
I think it was 50-50 on both our parts.
Okay. And did Ms. Shibiza's indicate to you or to Detective Scanlon that she was freaking out?
I do not recall those exact words. It's possible.
Okay. Do you recall, though, that she talked about having a lot of issues with open areas? Remember that?
But she was talking specifically about the basement area that she was in.
She didn't like the open area, though, correct?
No.
I'm correct on that?
I'm sorry?
I'm correct that she did not like the open area. Is that right?
She did not like the open area of the basement at Stony Brook in Green Bay.
Thanks. That clears that up for me. Her emotions came out during the interview, is that correct?
It's possible.
Did she tell you that she got very angry at herself?
Once again, you know, it was quite a lengthy interview. I do not recall every single comment that she made.
Okay. She did say during the interview that there were some times where she nodded out, correct?
Yes, I do recall that.
And she indicated to you that her and Shad went in the basement and within about 5 minutes got to it, correct?
Got to it?
Yes.
She stated that Shad produced a couple chains. Yes.
Yeah. Within 5 minutes of being down there, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And she told you there was no kissing, correct?
I do not remember that at all.
And she told you there was no sex, correct?
She said that it was starting to lead that way, but there was no sex while Shad was alive.
There was no penis to vagina sexual intercourse going on, correct? Is that fair?
Penis to vagina, no.
I'm correct about that, right?
She never stated that that occurred.
Okay. And did she indicate that her and she had theory and had took a toke off of some meth at the Eastman Avenue apartment in the bedroom?
Yes.
Okay, I have nothing further.
Just very briefly, you were asked about couple of terms, nodding out and tweaking. Are those terms that you have encountered in your experience as a detective or as a narcotics investigator?
Yes.
What do those terms mean to you, starting with nodding out?
Nodding out is a term typically heroin users would describe when they would become drowsy.
As a result of the drug use?
As a result of the drug use.
And how about tweaking?
Tweaking can refer to methamphetamine users. It's a stimulant, so it could cause them to be hyper or sudden body movements, and that is a result of the use of methamphetamine.
No further questions.
Anything on that, Mr. Fraley?
No.
Okay, thank you. You can step down. Does the state have any other witnesses?
No, Your Honor. At this time, the state rests.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the state has now rested their case. We're going to take a brief recess, and we'll reconvene in about 10 minutes. All rise for the jury. Seated. The state has rested. Then, Mr. Fralick, the case would then turn to the defense. Do you intend to call witnesses, or do you want to address me on the stipulated facts?
Yes. Before I do that, Your Honor, I'd like to make a motion for a directed verdict. Ask that the court consider.
Use the microphone.
Oh, sorry. ask that the court consider that as it relates to the first-degree intentional homicide count, I would argue that there is insufficient evidence to support that particular charge. There's insufficient evidence to show that my client, Taylor Denise Shabizis, had any intent to kill ST Shadtherian. What we have here is some testimony from a number of law enforcement officers. We also have some video footage from an interview between my client and Detective Groff and Detective Kempf. It's clear that my client likely did consume and ingest methamphetamine with Mr. Therian prior to his death. My client provided commentary and answered questions from Detective Groff. I would submit that what she indicated that was that she had no intent to kill. The question is, did my client do it or not? That's another question. There are a lot of different issues here going on, but based on what she said to the detective, I'd ask that the court consider dismissal of the first-degree intentional homicide charge on the grounds that there was no intent to kill. Also, there are really no eyewitnesses to whatever went on in the basement at 829 Stony Brook Lane in Green Bay. When Tara Pakinich and Stephen Hendricks went downstairs, they didn't find anybody down there. They found body parts, unfortunately, but they did not find my client there. My client was at 2353 Eastman Avenue, and that's where she was arrested. And there were no body parts over there. There were body parts in a van that was owned by Scott Tomes. That's not my client's minivan. That gold Town and Country Chrysler minivan belonged to Mr. Tomes. So there are a lot of issues here. As to the third-degree sexual assault charge, the state's got to prove that my client had sexual intercourse with Shadtherian. I believe, based on this record, there's and the video, there's no evidence to show that my client had any kind of penis-to-vagina contact with Mr. Therian. We have testimony from the DNA expert that indicated it was uninformative as to the dildo. And I know that my client claimed that the dildo was used on Mr. Therian, but there's no DNA evidence on that. And so I would ask that the court consider dismissal of the third-degree sexual assault charge as well for those reasons. Thank you. Finally, as to the mutilating a corpse, count two, again, there are no eyewitnesses to observe what really happened in the basement on the dating question. So for all these reasons, I'd ask that the court consider the motion for a directed verdict and dismiss these charges.
Mr. Saunders.
A reasonable juror viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state could convict. The state's met its burden. His motion should be denied.
Okay, well, these motions are fairly common in cases like this, and the court does have to, in these circumstances, look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. This is by no way the court making a decision about what the ultimate verdict in the case will be. That's up to the jury, not up to me. But the court's task at this point is to take a look at the four corners of the record, the evidence, to see whether the state has satisfied their burden of proof, at least to this point, such that the matter can move forward and be given to a jury. Each of these counts has two elements. The homicide count has two elements. The mutilating a corpse count has two elements. And the third-degree sexual assault count also has two elements. And the court is satisfied when considering the entire record in this case that a reasonable jury could conclude that the state has met its burden and convict based upon the evidence that has been offered thus far. Again, I'm to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. That isn't necessarily how a jury will look at it in their deliberations, but that's what I'm to do at this particular point. And in doing so, I'm satisfied that these motions for directed verdict should be denied, and that's what the court does at this time. So those motions are denied. And so I'm going to turn back to you, Mr. Frelick. My understanding is, as a result of Mr. Tomes not being here due to some health issues, that there's been a set of stipulated facts?
Yes, Your Honor. But before I do that, I know that my investigator had made attempts to contact Scott Tomes as part of the defense investigation in this case, and there was my investigator was not successful in making contact. But we did get a subpoena out, and the Brown County Sheriff's Department, I believe, subpoenaed Scott Tomes for court as a defense witness. The prosecutors did inform me promptly that he is not going to be available. Maybe he's got health problems or hospitalized, but they told me that he is not available. I've advised my client of this. I find that, and I'm not blaming the state, but I'm blaming him, that the timing of this seems suspect to me, that he's not available. I haven't seen any report, doctor's note, anything like that. So before I answer the court's question, I'd ask that the court consider a motion for mistrial because this witness is not here, has been properly subpoenaed, and I have no recourse to call him and question him about the issues in this case. So I'd ask that you consider that motion.
Well, before I turn to the state and ask for their response, Mr. Frelick, what can you tell me? What was your expectation of what he was going to testify to?
Well, I have some highlighted sections from his statement that the state and I agreed on as to what his testimony would be about. But, you know, when you call a witness, there may be other things that come up. But I'm working off a statement. I've highlighted the yellow parts that would be told to the jury if the court felt that was appropriate. But I felt the need, because I'm at this kind of crossroads with this kind of problem, that I would make this motion first.
Sure, but I don't think you have my question, because the question is, you've asked for a mistrial based upon the unavailability of this witness. So the question is, what was he going to testify to so that I can assess the gravity of his not being here?
I understand. Okay, thank you. I believe that he would testify that on that Monday night, I believe that would have been February 21st of 2022, that that Mr. Therian and Ms. Shabizis came over, that he did not know Shad's last name, but he saw him before, and that he believed that they hooked up to get some meth or do meth. That would have been about 9 p.m. on Monday night, and that he had this gold Chrysler Town & Country minivan, and his keys were on a lanyard, which hangs on a hook by his front door, and that he indicated that Taylor Shabizis has used his vehicle in the past, but with his permission, and that she's always asked to use it. And then he said she did not ask to use the vehicle last night, and that he did not give her permission to take the vehicle. And he said he did not call the police to report the vehicle missing. And then he indicated that he was drinking some whiskey and cranberry juice, and that he sometimes gets drunk, but not inebriated. He indicated around midnight, Ms. Shabizis returned home with his vehicle, and she went basically directly to her bedroom, that he had a suspicion she may be high on drugs, and that he believed the police arrived 15 or 20 minutes after Ms. Shabizis got home. And then he talked about the living arrangements in the apartment, and that Ms. Shabizis stays in the bedroom, and he sleeps in his chair in the living room. So.
Okay, so the first thing I want to take up is Mr. Frelick's motion for a mistrial based upon the unavailability of Mr. Tomes.
I think the motion should be denied. Essentially, everything counsel stated, the state is willing and has prepared a stipulation to that effect. So I don't think that the drastic remedy of a mistrial is necessary. I do want to be quite clear. The state does not control Mr. Tomes. We in no way told him to disregard a defense subpoena as part of our case. We chose not to call him. We were advised about the medical issue, and we passed that information along to defense counsel. So I don't want it to there to be this record that we are influencing his unavailability in any way. Obviously, counsel can still attempt to have him here and still attempt to produce him. It's an issue the state deals with fairly regularly in trials. That isn't being done, so I don't think the defense failing to produce a defense witness is grounds for a mistrial, particularly when the state's willing to stipulate to everything the defense seeks to elicit, essentially.
Your Honor, I want to let the court know that Mr. Saunders promptly let me know of this situation as soon as he found out about it, so that was appreciated.
Okay. I don't want all the details, but as far as a medical issue, I mean, if you have a bad cold, that's a medical issue. If you are in the hospital for serious surgery, that's a medical issue too. Is he incapacitated? Is he just staying at home because he doesn't feel like getting out? Do we have a sense of that?
I think the latter. The information we received is that he was in hospital and would be for several weeks. That was the information we received from a relative.
Okay. Well, so in front of me then is a motion for a mistrial. A number of things. First of all, when I listened to the recitation of the information that Mr. Tomes was going to testify to, first of all, I'm satisfied that a lot of that information has already been testified to by other witnesses, particularly the individual, the mutual friend of Mr. Therian's and Ms. Shabusiness's, who was here yesterday, testified to some of the events that occurred at Mr. Tomes' apartment. Frankly, some of the other information that Mr. Tomes was going to be testifying to that was referenced by Mr. Fralick, I think was brought in through some other of the witnesses. The information about the, you know, where the, what Ms. Shabusiness did with Mr. Therian while they were at Mr. Tomes' apartment. There was reference to potentially utilizing controlled substances there, that perhaps Mr. Tomes was in either a different part of the house or had his gaze focused somewhere else while they utilized controlled substances behind his back so he didn't see. That kind of information has come in other areas. Really, the only piece of information that that I heard that doesn't sound like it came in any other fashion, except by indirect statements from Ms. Shabusiness in her interview with law enforcement, was the comment that, you know, when she used his van in the past, she asked permission, and that she didn't ask for permission that night to use his van. And there's a couple of things about that particular piece of information. I remember the information in the video where the detective was asking her questions, and she indicated in response to her question, I don't know if he knew that I was leaving or not. I don't know. I think she was uncertain whether Mr. Tomes actually knew that she was leaving. And the reality of it is, if she was utilizing his van and she was uncertain whether or not she even knew about it, whether or not he even knew about it, then that might confirm a statement whereby Mr. Tomes says, yeah, she usually asked for permission, but that night she didn't. That would be very consistent with what she reported in her interview. Beyond that, I'm not really sure the extent to which that piece of information is so relevant, that his presence is needed here as opposed to stipulating to the facts that are outlined. For all those reasons, I'm satisfied that the fact that he hasn't responded and arrived here today due to medical reasons, I'm not going to grant a mistrial for that reason. I am then going to turn to the parties to determine if there's anything else that needs to be recited regarding that stipulated set of facts, or whether, Mr. Fralick, you've actually gone through and recited it there. Is that what you would intend to have recited?
Mr. Saunders has it, Your Honor. So I'm just going to take another look at it real quick. What I did was highlighted in yellow the relevant sections from the statement he gave to police, and then Mr. Saunders' office had it typed out, so it's in proper order.
Okay. Gentlemen, how do you want that submitted into the record?
I can mark it, and then perhaps the court can just read it at some point during the defense case.
You want the court to read it?
Yes, please.
Okay. Sure. Well, then we'll mark it as Exhibit 111.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So then just for my own edification, Mr. Fralick, I would intend to read this to the jury as soon as they're brought back in.
Okay.
Other than potentially your client testifying, do you have any other witnesses that you, because then we're going to move right into other witnesses. But if you said, well, that's the only one, and then the only issue is whether your client's going to testify, then how we'll proceed is I'll bring in the jury, I'll read in these stipulated facts, I'll excuse the jury again, and then I'll have the colloquy with your client about her testimony. So can you give me a sense? Do you have other witnesses?
Your Honor, I've looked at my list here. A lot of the witnesses I was going to call have already been called, so I think we're good. I will need some additional time to confer with my client on whether she wishes to testify or not, but
okay,
that's where we're at.
All right, well then,
can I just quick, I know some of the defense some of the law enforcement officers had defense subpoenas. Is it okay to cancel them then?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, it sounds like all the other subpoenas that are out there are now canceled. Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else before bringing in the jury, Mr. Saunders?
No.
Mr. Fralick?
No.
Okay, so I'll bring in the jury folks. I'll read them this stipulated facts. I'm going to excuse them again. We'll break for a little more so you can speak with your client about testifying. And then we'll come back and I'll have that colloquy with her and go from there, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Be seated. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the state of Wisconsin, the attorney for the defendant, and the defendant have stipulated or agreed that if Scott Tomes had been called as a witness, he would have testified as follows. Scott Tomes was interviewed by a Green Bay Police Department detective on February 23rd, 2022, and stated that on Monday night, the defendant had a friend over named Shad. Mr. Tomes did not know Shad's last name, but had seen him before. Mr. Tomes indicated he believed Ms. Shabusiness hooked up with Shad to get and do meth. He believed this was about 9 p.m. on Monday night. Mr. Tomes stated that he had his car keys on a lanyard which hangs on a hook next to the front door. Tomes stated his vehicle is a gold Chrysler Town & Country with Wisconsin tag 580ZJZ. Mr. Tomes stated Taylor has used his vehicle in the past, but with his permission, and that she always asked him to use it. She stated Ms. Shabusiness did not ask him to use his car last night and that he did not give her permission to take his vehicle. He did not report the vehicle missing. Mr. Tomes stated he was drinking last night and indicated he gets drunk but not inebriated. He indicated that around midnight, Taylor returned home with his vehicle. He stated she basically went directly into her bedroom. Mr. Tomes suspected Taylor was high on drugs. Believed the police arrived 15 to 20 minutes after Taylor got home. Mr. Tomes was also asked about the living arrangements in his apartment and stated that Taylor stays in the bedroom and he sleeps in his chair in the living room. Mr. Tomes was later interviewed by a Green Bay Police Department detective on March 9, 2022. Mr. Tomes stated that A.J. Gannon and Taylor Shabusiness were at the Eastman Avenue apartment on Monday, February 21, 2022, before they left and came back with Shad Therian. Mr. Tomes stated that Gannon did leave on his own, leaving Taylor and Shad still at the residence. You will consider that testimony in the same manner as if it had been given under oath here in court. I have marked that as Exhibit 111, and that's being offered, Mr. Fralick?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Exhibit 111 will be received.
Your Honor, could that be published to the jury? Or probably not necessary, I guess.
I'm not going to publish it to the jury because that would involve either putting it up on the screen or passing it through there, and I'm not going to have them read it. But it is Exhibit 111.
Thank you.
And then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to excuse you briefly again, so I'll rise for the jury. My understanding is you'd like to speak with your client for a little bit about her decision as to whether or not to testify. Is that correct?
That's correct, whether she's going to testify or not testify.
My understanding is you can do that right back there to the side door. So okay. We'll be in recess then. I'm going to be checking in on you, Mr. Fralick, by 25 after. But if you need a little more time than that, you need to let us know. But I'm going to check in with you about that time, okay?
Okay. Can you just give me till 2:30, Your Honor?
Sure.
Okay.
2:30.
All right. Thank
We're
you.
In recess.
You're listening to True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.